Conference is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time.
Yes, once again, welcome everybody. Very important. We're getting close to 150 callers, and I'm sure there will be well over 200 by the time this is over. Very important. People keep on calling in. As I started every call, the health issue is the top priority, and I do ask everybody to follow the Dr. Scott's directions along with the governor's office and the governor. That's the top priority. But as you know, these calls have been going on for several weeks now, and we think it's very important to be really working very hard at small businesses. As I've said many times, we don't want anybody to lose their house. We don't want anybody to, you know, lose their apartment or not have food on the table. We don't want any small business that was operating prior to this health crisis not to be operating after this health crisis is over. So with that, I know that Mark Hayward shares those feelings because he's working very, very hard on the SBA issues, and we know that it's not easy with the millions and millions of people that are looking for help, but that's just an indication of how we need to support our small businesses. And today we'll have Mark. We'll also have somebody from the business regulation on today. We'll have a panel of farmers today because we're talking about a very key point in terms of the farming industry right now to level the playing field with its competition in Massachusetts. We'll have an update on the Gift It Forward, and then we'll have time for some other businesses to weigh in as well that have been on the panel in the past. So, Mark, please give us the update, and I do have a couple questions for you, but please give us the update. I know that things are moving very fast and furious on your end of the spectrum, so please, thank you, and thanks again, Mark, for being here and being champion for small businesses.
Thank you, Governor. As everybody knows, the Paycheck Protection Program funds have been exhausted. The agency is not taking any additional applications, so we're not creating a queue. The funds for the Economic Injury Disaster Loan are exhausted. That application process is also down and not taking any queue. There actually is a huge queue right now in EIDL loans. Congress is aware of both of them. I've talked to all of the members of Congress over the last week. Essentially, the lenders are moving forward to close and disperse loans, provide, I've never seen these numbers for Rhode Island, but it's pretty significant. It's over 8,000 loans, approaching somewhere in the vicinity of $1.3 billion, maybe a little bit more. And that's a pretty significant number. We're fielding questions on what does forgiveness look like and how do I bring people back on board. We're working with Matt Weldon over at DLT to answer any questions. The DLT has been terrific in this process. And just a reminder, if anybody did get the Paycheck Protection Program loan, that is to bring your staff back onto your payroll. They're over an eight-week period, and I think people are doing that. I will say, Governor, we've probably in the last 24 hours, between my staff and I, we probably fielded anywhere between 500 to 700 questions.
Wow. Yeah, they're out there, and I know that you're working your way through it, but I think that the point you just made, because I don't get 500 to 700, I get a couple hundred, but the point you just made is that the PPP is there to protect not only the business of business, but also the people who work at those businesses. That was the intent of that loan, right? To make sure that they were on payroll.
Correct. That is correct, and people are bringing people back on payroll as we speak. I had one small business owner call me and say, "Well, it's Wednesday. I closed my loan today, but there are people who are on unemployment." I said, "Well, they're going to get paid through the end of the week, and if there's any retroactive, they'll get the retroactive as well." I said, "So my suggestion is that you begin your eight-week period on Monday." And that's essentially what she's going to do. We have a lot of people calling and saying, "What do I do? I had an application with the bank and I haven't heard anything." I will tell you that I have been talking to lenders around the state. I have not heard back from all the lenders as of yet, but as I can see right now, there's about 8,000 in the queue. Well, so my suggestion is if anybody wanted a Paycheck Protection Program loan, if the Congress does refund it, every lender has told me that they're taking the they're taking applications and they're just keeping them in a queue as they come in.
Yeah, so Mark, one of the questions that came that's come up, which is a good situation for one of the business owners that asked it. I'm sure others are in that asking the same question. They got approved on the idle. They got either 10,000 or up to the $1,000 per employee, which is another thing that we want to keep on repeating to people that that's the program on that emergency fund on the idle. But they also have been approved on a PPP, so they were wondering what the procedure was when they accept the PPP. What happens to the $10,000 emergency grant? How is that treated, and how is that rolled into the PPP program?
So actually, it rolls right into the application, so the lender is aware of it. It will say average monthly payroll. This was in the so that it'll just be reported on the PPP, and the 75-25 split will apply to, let's say you got 10,000 and you got 5,000 on the idle advance, so then you got 15, and the 75-25 split would be based on that amount.
So it gets rolled in, but it's on top of the PPP. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, so it says when you look at the application, Governor, it says average monthly payroll, we'll say 10,000 times 2.5 plus EIDL, net of the advance if applicable, equals the loan request. So I mean, so basically they're adding it in, but you have to remember the split. That's the key here.
Great. Mark, are you going to be able to stay on the call? Are you running? Because I know business is on.
No, I can stay on the call, Governor.
Great. That's great. Then, because I know that will be probably coming back to you, but I just want to make sure we stay within this hour and get some of the questions answered. But I know that is the DBR Deputy Director on, Julietta?
Yes, I'm on. Hello, everyone.
Great. Well, welcome to the call. You know, I know you got some big shoes to fill with Liz, but she's told me you're going to fill them just fine.
Uh-oh, that's not good. When people say things like the person usually bombs.
No. She said you're going to be great. I know you wanted to kind of go over some of the recent executive orders relative to masks and anything else that you want to update us on. We appreciate you being here and we appreciate your leadership on all the things that are helping the small businesses.
Well, Governor, thank you so much for inviting me to join your company today. There's a lot of important things going around the state. Everyone's aware. The DBR has basically, you know, besides all our other responsibilities that we have throughout the year with this whole new COVID world that we live in, our main task has been fielding, you know, countless calls that come in from small business owners such as yourselves, manufacturers, you know, questioning at the beginning, am I essential? Am I non-essential? Do I stay open? Do I close? How can I operate and still stay open? And then those calls kind of morphed into the executive order du jour, right? So we kind of tailed off of the essential versus non-essential businesses for a while and moved on to general complaints that I call the tattletaling phase. So there's a lot of, you know, fear out there, and we got a lot of volume and calls and emails of people just saying, you know, the person that is at my work looks a little sweaty. I don't know if it's allergies. I don't know if it's COVID. I don't want to come to work anymore. So we got through a lot of that. You know, my neighbor looked like they had one more car in their parking lot than they usually do. Aren't we supposed to be, you know, only five people? Aren't we supposed to social distance? So, you know, we moved off of that phase now, and we're on the face coverings phase after the new executive order that came out. So one thing I did want to kind of make clear to everyone, you're all small business owners. You should assume that it applies to you, right? So we're saying anyone customer-facing, anyone client-facing, anyone office-based, nonprofit organizations, manufacturers, construction, the food industry, it applies to pretty much everyone. It applies to both employees and customers that come into your establishment. But the important thing to note, and this is what I really want you to take away, because we have seen some really horrible things happening in other states, even though the customers and your customers are supposed to be wearing them and they are required to per the new executive order, we don't want you to be policing that. So we have seen videos where, some supermarkets in other states, the manager has physically grabbed a customer that walked in without a face covering, threw them out. That's not okay. So other employees should not be tattling on other employees. That's management's responsibility to get a cloth face covering for everyone on their staff. And like I said, just, the important takeaway of don't prohibit a customer from coming in because they don't have one. You're welcome to call the DBR. We'll send out local police or whatever we need to do on our side, but we don't want that altercation between business owner and customer, which I know you're unlikely to do. All the people, on this call, I'm sure are amazing. That's why you're on this call. But we have had instances of people posting on Facebook, I can't wait till I can kick a customer out because they don't have a mask on. So we're trying to avoid those kind of situations. I don't want to keep rambling on, but I do want you to know that if you go to dbr.ri.gov, you will find the guidance around these face cloth coverings, both in English and in Spanish. It is the employer's responsibility to acquire a face mask for every single one on their payroll. But at the same time, if they are allowed, employees are allowed to fashion their own. We've got on the link, we've got on our guidance links on how to make these. It doesn't have to be, it shouldn't be, rather, now that there's a shortage of, surgical masks and all these kind of things. We're not asking anyone to wear the N95s or anything that you would see on a doctor or a nurse. It is actually just a face cloth covering. It could be a scarf, it could be a t-shirt, anything that tightly covers the mouth and the nose. One other thing that I wanted to stress is if you are an office-based company, right, and you have 2-3 employees and they each have their office and they can all maintain a 6 feet distance at all times during the day, then you don't have to wear them. We're not trying to be, it's not completely black and white. We'd like to see as many people as possible wearing them. But if you do have an establishment where people don't congregate and they can maintain that 6 feet distance, you are free not to wear those. I'm happy to take any questions you have.
So if there's any questions of Julieta, and thank you, Julieta, which I should have introduced you as the deputy director right at the DBR. She's our go-to person now. Liz has been reassigned at this moment to the EMA, Liz Tanner, so we're in good hands here. So if anybody has questions, as the director just said, they can go directly to DBR. If they want to put questions to us, they can go ltgob20@gmail.com, and then we'll pass those questions along. So, Director, thank you so much for being here. If you can stick around and listen to some of the businesses, that's great. But if you have to go, then that's okay too. But if you do stick around.
We may thank
have
you.
A couple questions. Great. We
Sounds
may have
good.
A few
thank
questions
you.
For you. So next, I wanted to introduce two senators in the General Assembly, Senator Lou DePalma. Senator Josh Miller. They've been participating on these calls right from the very beginning. They have a real strong interest in small business. I'll have them introduce themselves. And I'm going to bring on some of our reps on Tuesday's call to just get a perspective from the General Assembly. That right now it's silent because they're not actively in session, but they will be eventually. And we really appreciate both senators participating in these calls, and of course the other work that they're doing outside of these calls to help and support the small businesses. So let me start with Senator DePalma. Are you there?
I am.
Good. And Senator Miller, are you there as well?
Yes, I am.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us. And why don't you just share a few comments, and then again, if there's questions of our senators, we can send them to ltgov20@gmail.com. But the floor is yours, and thank you so much for both of you and all the other reps and senators that have been joining in on these calls, including Senator Cano, who's out there in the audience right now that I may have join you. But yes, Senator Palmer, Senator Miller, please.
Thank you, Governor. And as you indicated there, while there may be only a few that you know that are hearing on the line right now, many other senators, probably all 38, I would suspect, are working with constituents, including small businesses, constituents on trying to address the issues. These have been great calls. Obviously, an opportunity to hear, listen. The key thing is then how do we act with regards to it. And it's allowing us to stay apprised of the issues and challenges you're having as it relates to COVID-19, as it relates to your business, your employees, your family, et cetera. So a couple things I want to address, and I'll try and be as quick as possible. What we've been addressing, obviously, constituent issues over these last number of weeks, now month plus, many of them associated with unemployment insurance. People are starting to get into checks from the federal government, so those things are helping a little bit. That will soon dissipate, and the challenges will be even bigger than they are now. So that's a big issue we're working to address, including small businesses. In fact, I spoke with one who might be on the phone earlier today, Garden Center Retail Shop, amongst other things that's having challenges, because one of the things that the associated with farmers in this Garden Retail Shop, when they buy wholesale, they have to take the product, even though they can't sell it. They can't tell the wholesaler, take it back, or don't ship it. The wholesaler is basically saying, you ordered it, you're getting it, and you're going to have to pay for it. So that's a challenge for small businesses there. We are, with regards to the same small business did apply for the PPP and didn't receive it because it was closed out. Their application's in, so Mark, it was good to hear that whatever the local bank that has it, hopefully will be able to energize that or reactivate it once Congress does what they need to do to make it happen. With regards to General Assembly and what we're able to do, since we're not in session, we just got notice we won't be in session next week, didn't expect we would be. We're trying to stay abreast of issues and situations across the various constituent groups, whether it's small business. We had a Zoom meeting yesterday to understand and appreciate how COVID-19 is impacting the child welfare system, also known as the work that the Department of Children, Youth, and Families does. We have over upwards of 4,000 babies, children, teenagers, young adults, et cetera, that are in the care of the state, no issue of their own. And we heard yesterday from 10 or 12 different folks, leaders across the state, about how COVID-19 is impacting them. So now we need to figure out what do we do next. So we're looking at trying to do other things like that to make certain while we're not in session, we can still work to try and understand and appreciate, hear, listen, and then act to address those challenges that people are facing since we're not in session. And then the last piece, and I'll turn over to Senator Miller, from a business perspective, where we started this, small businesses obviously are the lifeblood of Rhode Island. We need to understand and appreciate the challenges you're having. These calls have been excellent, as the governor indicated, but on just about all of them, I think. So we're trying to address the issues and challenges now to our greatest degree, be a conduit and an advocate to the governor's office, the administration, given the emergency situation we're in. But then as we exit through COVID-19 and we go back to, dare I say, regular order, so to speak, how do we ensure we put things in place to address that as well? The last piece that's come up before, it's a long putt to make this happen, and I'm not a golfer, has to do with business continuity. I've talked with some senators, and I've looked at, I think it's 8 other states, maybe 9. I won't rattle them off now. I think I know all of them that have put legislation in the late March timeframe before they exited, or some may still be in session, as it relates to business continuity with insurance companies. Trying to see what we might be possible there. So I'll turn it over to Senator Miller.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Miller, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, that was a great length of issues that Senator DePalma went over. I'll try to add to that. As many of you know, I bring the lens of one of the legislators who's actually a small business person. So it's an interesting lens, and it's an interesting balance in trying to take care of constituent issues and what issues reps and senators in my area bring up to me. And I'll give you kind of a list of what I've had to deal with over the last few weeks since this has really set in with us. Doctors talking to me about telehealth issues, work slips for medical leave, doctor credentialing over different hospital systems, retailers wondering about deferring property tax or sales tax payments. Unemployment insurance, almost every day I deal with an individual or a business trying to help them on unemployment, having somebody collect unemployment because we don't want anybody to be without a revenue stream. HealthSource Rhode Island and enrollment, mortgage and rent issues I've gotten calls on that we've actually been able to work out between the lender or the landlord, whether it be hospital protocols from hospitals. Most recently, both we had a farm issue that we'll get to later, I'm sure, with your panel on issues that they've been having. Access to mental health has become a real issue that is really important and a priority to me. And that phases into what I'm talking to with other legislators. What I'm talking to with other legislators is how do we transition our priorities to the COVID-19 priorities. So when I talk about that, what I'm thinking about is how do we look at issues that we've seen have changed and risen in priority based on what we've seen over the last few weeks. So to me, that's about what's happened to our social safety network and our healthcare network and how important it is to have better access to both of those. And the other thing that has come up as a piece of conversation amongst legislators is what is a fair wage and how do we reappreciate through wage our frontline workers? And do we have to reassess how these people have access not only to a better wage, but access to better health care and all the services that we need and that we appreciate they're giving to us, whether it be in a assisted living or nursing home setting or the grocery store clerk, several settings that we've all gone to appreciate how much they do for us and therefore should they be compensated differently and have different benefits, including health benefits.
Well, thank you, Senator. Did Senator Cano, Senator, are you on? Did you enter the panel?
Yes, Senator Governor, thank you so much.
Yes. And as you work with the bank and the small businesses, just echo a little bit of the things that we have well over several hundred callers already. Small business people, they really want to see you know, the small businesses become a priority in the state as it's happening in other states, and access to credit, access to capital, as Mark Haywood said, well over 8,000 applications in the state of Rhode Island so far. And there's thousands more coming, Mark, because a lot of sole proprietors have not been able to access a forgiveness type of thing based on payroll because their overhead is more in their insurances, more in their rents, more in their mortgages. So there's thousands more of small business. So Senator Cano, just give us your little experience. I know you've been a big champion for the small business over the period of time that you've been in office, not only as a school committee person, a city council member, and now as a senator from Pawtucket.
Thank you so much, Lieutenant Governor. First, I would like to take a minute to wish a happy birthday to Senator Miller. I know he doesn't like birthdays, but it's a special day and he's a special senator. So happy birthday, Senator Miller. And thank you, Senator Zupalna, for your insight as well. What I need to add is, along with what my colleagues have mentioned, I think that one important part of all of these crises is that we have to think about our micro businesses. And I know Lieutenant Governor had already talked in different panels about this. But one thing that I like to add is that many municipalities are offering help as well. So, for example, in the city of Pawtucket, we do have a different loan program for the small businesses. And there is a survey in the city of Pawtucket that is asking for feedback of how COVID-19 have actually hurt or impacted the small businesses, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to continue to advocate for more resources on their behalf, so they need to hear from businesses. So I know local municipalities are helping on the effort as well and making sure that they connect with the resources available. One thing that I like to mention that I have received a lot of calls that it wasn't mentioned before is that we do have a lot of our small business community that have been, you know, contributing to our economy, paying taxes, but they don't qualify for any help because of their immigration status. So we do have a lot of undocumented immigrants that are waiting for the path of citizenship that are successful small businesses in Rhode Island that do have an EIN number, pay taxes every year, every quarter, have a good business, and they are not being taken care of because they don't qualify for these programs. So what I'm trying to do is we're trying to really connect those resources and making sure that they are not left behind. Because I heard from a lot of them that they're really concerned and they don't know what opportunities that they can access. So I know the state is working in something to help them, but suddenly the federal government and the PPP loan didn't allow them to qualify for that, right? So that's something for us to think about. Along with what my colleagues have said, and again, messaging and communication is also a priority, because people are overwhelmed with a lot of information. Of course, we're living in a crisis, and there is a lot of resources, but the accessibility of the resources in one place, which I think the federal government has done an amazing job, is what is needed. So I really appreciate everything that has been done. I'm here to help. And there is certainly something that we need to take into a priority to help our small businesses that are the backbone of our community. And to talk about our minority-owned business, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is really doing an excellent job connecting them with those resources and making sure that they have access to them. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks to all the senators for being here. And when you get back in session, we know that our small businesses are going to be relying on you, and for you to be participating during these weeks with me and others, I really do appreciate it. And we'll forward some of the things that are happening in other states that other general assemblies are doing, other governors are doing, to really address the issues that the small businesses are facing right now. And Senator Miller, you and I are cut from the same cloth relative to the challenges that we have, and we've worked our way through banking crises, and we've worked our way through, 9/11 and the real estate bubble, and this is no different. There's a lot of anxiety out there with our small businesses, and hopefully we're going to be able to talk at some point.
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead, Senator.
I spend a lot of time talking to people to make sure they know what help is out there. If they're not, haven't filed for unemployment, even if they're a sole prop or a 1099 like your barber or your trainer at the gym, or just making sure that all the people know, like, how to fill out a loan if they're reluctant to fill it out, how to make sure they qualify for those extra unemployment benefits, trying to make sure to cover as many gaps so as many people as possible are receiving all the benefits that they can receive, or helping them through a loan application, making sure they know that they're eligible for some of these programs. A lot of people don't realize they're eligible.
I think that's a great point, Senator. And the other thing I would just say here is that the people who are on the call and the people who are going to hear this recording and the reporting that's going to be done by the media that's on this call, our reps and senators are out there. They're great resources, and in a lot of ways they've been put on the on the bench here because of the fact that they can't operate, but they're there to help you. I know they are, because I'm contacting them with them all the time. So senators, thank you for being here. I want to just respect this 1 hour time frame. I'm hoping that you can stay and listen to the call, and I really do appreciate the fact that you're out there and having the ability not only to listen and take action with your constituents, but also the fact that you've been very collaborative with our office in a way that is helping a lot of people. So we appreciate you being on the call. Next, what I'd like
to
do is...
thanks for inviting me.
You bet.
Thank you.
We'll keep you involved for sure. I would like to have Justin come on from Oceanside Graphics, give like a two-minute overview on this Gift It Forward update. And I just would say that he's got some partners now for some other businesses that we're going to have on a panel next week as they kind of launch this small business strategy even further than it's already been launched. But I think some of you probably have seen the billboards on the highway promoting the Rhode Island Small Business.org. That is something that wouldn't have happened without Justin and a phone call that we had a month ago or more. To talk about how small businesses that are on the call, and this is the time I'll give you my cell phone number, 401-465-6204, 401-465-6204. That's my cell phone number, and I shared that a few weeks back. Justin gave me a call, and then we were able to put something together that is really remarkable, and I was growing. So, Justin, just give us a couple-minute overview, and then I want to spend the last 25 minutes with the Farm Bureau, with the Farm
Bureau. Sure, that. Absolutely. Thank you very much for that. So as of the last 15 minutes, I just checked the stats on the site. The site itself has 80,928 visits. We've had over 5,000 visits this week just to the website. We've had a total of 4,400 people click on the link to buy gift cards. And just from Monday to now we've had 370. We have 950 total businesses signed up, so we're nearing that 1,000 mark. And just this week alone, we've had 50 businesses sign up. So we're still getting a very good response from the small business community, as well as consumers coming onto the site. And, you know, a lot of that can be attributed to, like we just mentioned, the billboards. So thank you to Lamar. They have graciously sent us some billboards. We'll have them up for a minimum of the next 4 weeks. They are willing to extend it into May, and maybe a little bit further, depending on, you know, how we are with all the social distancing rules and, you know, the economy being reopened. So right now we have a billboard on Route 37 right near Garden City. We have one on 195 in East Providence, and there is one on 95 above the Cove Metal Buildings. So that's, again, thank you to Lamar. They're showing their support to the small business community, who, you know, wouldn't be there without, you know, this community. As you mentioned, we do have some partners now. So we've really started to dive into some work with Chris from Trailbreak Marketing and Lori from Visual Thrive, who both own, you know, web-based type businesses that work in conjunction with small businesses. We're putting our long-term strategy together to make the RI Small Business website become a true small business hub for all of us now and going forward. One thing that I did want to mention is we've added some events to the calendar. One of those events are happening this weekend. The Ocean Community Chamber is doing a Facebook Live event on Saturday, I believe, and that is basically going to be directed to buy some gift cards and buy different things to their resources. So everybody try to get on there and see if you can gift it forward to them. And we've partnered and added the RI Delivers services to the main page of the website to mirror what the state is doing and being able to get some of those state resources on there as well. Next week, like you mentioned, we'll get together and we'll go more of that long-term strategy, but let's give these small businesses a chance to be heard. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah, Justin, thank you for that work. And I'll just add that anybody out there who looking to volunteer in a way to kind of feed into this idea that we want to make sure that the small businesses that are open are getting business, and the ones who are closed are getting gift certificates. And so if you have thoughts and ideas of how that can work, I know there's a number of small pilots out there that are doing that in their neighborhoods. We're going to hear about that on the next panel that we bring forward, which is the farm panel. And, contact me or text me or email me at lieutenantgovernor20@gmail.com. So this is the last 20 minutes I want to spend, and then we'll spend the last 5 minutes to try to wrap it up with some of the people that are on the call to kind of have them weigh in on some of the things they've heard. In fact, I've got a question for the senators in a second, I believe. So, but I want to introduce this topic, which is important to all of us. And you've heard me say many, many times that we need to make sure across the industries that we are really supporting one another. in a way so that the farmers are getting support from the restaurants are getting support from the manufacturers, the barbers are getting support from the, you know, the musicians, and on and on and on. Because if we don't do that, we're not going to have a big enough number to actually impact policy. So right now, this is a very important issue. The farmers, the garden centers, are allowed to operate in Massachusetts and New York and Connecticut. You're going to hear more detail from that from the farmers that I've asked to come onto the panel. This happened to be one of my tours, my 39 tours in 2017. I visited a farm in every community, and I think I visited more than one in many communities. I think I got up to 60, 70 farms. There's several hundred farms, by the way, in Rhode Island of different types of farms. This one, this topic's in particular about the garden centers. So I want to just introduce the people who are on the panel, and I wanted to start with Rich Clark. Rich, are you there?
I am here, Lieutenant Governor.
Rich, yeah, give us like a 30-second overview of what you're doing, and then I'll go to Vinny Confreda, and then I'll go to Bill Stamp, and then I'll go to Heidi Quinn, and I think that you may have a guest with you as well, right?
Yeah, Sarah Partick from Farmer's Daughter is also on the call, I believe. And so
Go ahead, Rich. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I just want to say I'm delighted that you're involved and that so many other people are getting involved in our cause right now. And I think it's really helping to get the word out and help everyone understand the problems we're facing. And I think that, you know, what we really want to see is some kind of understanding of how we can move our crop before we waste our crop. You know, we're getting to the point where we really need to make a move with inventory in order to make room for inventory we're going to need later in the season when hopefully this crisis is over. And, you know, it's becoming urgent. And I was pretty relaxed about this whole thing a month ago and thought things are going to be fine. And we're getting to the point now where it's getting critical. And I'm excited that we're making what I feel like is some kind of headway and progress right now. And then we'll get this under control. I think that, you know, the one issue that's bothered me right from the beginning is that, you know, if this was really for public health and we were doing this, you know, making this sacrifice, that's obviously a huge sacrifice for us, that we would see the big boxes shut down too. You know, that the argument doesn't wash that somehow leaving us closed is helpful if you're going to ignore the fact that now we've concentrated the entire consumer base in the place that we least wanted them. I mean, the governor's been clear that the big boxes are a problem. She's been concerned about the big boxes. And when they're wide open and we're not open, everybody's going to one point instead of spreading people out over the community. And obviously it has a lot of unintended consequences economically for us. And I really don't think it's reaching the result that she's seeking in terms of public health. It's actually backfired. So I think it's time to, you know, my motto in life is ready, fire, aim. And I think, you know, she did fire, and we need to now refine our aim a little bit and get this down to where it needs to
be. Yeah, Rich, I'll just also kind of interject there is that, you know, you're trying to service your customers, and I'm going to go to Vinny Confreda right after this. But you're servicing your customers, and it's been pointed out to me more than once that there's certainly a health benefit to people doing their gardening, especially this time of isolation. So I would think the last thing we would want is a shutdown of all our garden centers. We want to just open all our garden centers up, right?
That's what we'd like to see, and obviously within the constraints of public health and doing it right, and I think there's no industry better able to service our customers safely than we are. We're out in a wide open space, and it's a healthy by definition, and with proper management, it can be healthy for everybody ongoing, in my opinion.
Yeah, and Rich, I'll just add, and I'm going to go to Vinny next, to kind of get everybody get like a 2 minutes in, and then we'll open it up to some discussion. Yeah, open them all. Open up all the garden centers under the type of guidelines that make sense. Otherwise, if we shut down the garden centers completely for a period of time, all our customers and all the people are going to go to Massachusetts and buy because they can buy at garden centers right now, both big box and the small businesses. Right, Rich. So we don't want to push our customers into Massachusetts. Let's all just open up all the garden centers. Vinny, you're on there, and your farm was one of the farms that I visited. I don't know. Have you been able to get into the call, Vinny? Not yet. So I'll try to get him in on that on the call.
Heidi, what, are you on the call by any chance? Heidi?
I'm here, Lieutenant.
Oh, you are, Vinny. Good.
Oh, no, this is not Vinny. This is Bill Stamp
from
Stamp Farm.
Okay, so yeah, just introduce yourself and then, you know, share some of your thinking on this issue, and I appreciate you being here on the call. And I enjoyed the picture you sent me. Your picture you sent me today from your greenhouse.
Thank you. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. First thing I wanted to do was to thank you, and I wanted to thank the senators that were on the call here, and I wanted to thank the people in the administration and all the hard work they're doing to confront this problem and try to help small business and farmers and garden centers around our state. So thank you for your effort. Now, I'm standing in a wonderful greenhouse right now, and it's beautiful in here, and I have in front of me vegetable transplants and flower transplants and all sorts of things. And my wife and sons are working in the greenhouses aside here. And, you know, we're going forward and getting ready for the season. And all of us in those arenas, we provide products not only to ourselves and our farms to raise for the community, but also to our neighbors. And in that, they do a lot of vegetable gardening. They're going to be gardening a lot around their houses seemingly this year because they're going to be staying home. We want to make sure that we understand and provide in a safe manner all the products that we can to help us all get through this this problem here. I stand here as a multi-generational farmer. I'm on the board of Rhode Island Farm Bureau. I've had conversations with Ken Ayers, the Division of Ag Director, also with the group calls that they've been on trying to listen and trying to find solutions to some of these problems. We've been listening to our neighboring states. They're taking action. They're standing up for their small businesses and their farmers. They're trying to help us with our food products that we sell. They understand that the non-necessity products are a little bit of a difficulty, but if you really look at it in the logic of trying to help everybody in this situation, if we use our social distancing arenas and if we make sure we cordon off and only have a certain amount of people in our venues and we all have the required equipment that's needed, I think we can respectfully help one another and actually work to benefit everybody in the picture here. And I think that's what all the farmers and garden center people and the small businesses here in our community are doing. And I know that you guys understand that. You're working on that effort. But I wanted to stand here and speak in this nice greenhouse here that we're doing our part to go forward. We want to certainly produce products for you from a farm perspective. But we also want to help you, that's the your constituents out there, in your gardening efforts and in your enjoyment efforts of having to be around your homes from that standpoint. So the conversation is great. We need to work together. We need to follow some procedures. I think that we should listen to our neighboring states. I know each state is different. But in the conversation, I think that we can come to some final outcomes that will be good for everybody. On a closing note, I was just going to say that my dad planted some peas the other day. He's an 80-year-old farmer that works here with us. And they're starting to come up. So, you always have to work with hope on the horizon. We're still planting here, and I'm sure if Vinny was on the call, and I know Richard's on the call, and Heidi and any other farmers that I've talked to, we're trying to make the best of the situation by continuing to plant and looking optimistically forward that we'll find solutions to this. So thanks again.
Yeah, Bill, thank you. And I let me just ask you a quick question because we talked about it
sure.
A little bit. Is that a 2-3 week, 4 week delay on doing something to help open up the garden shops is going to really be a problematic for you, right, in terms of the inventory you have
some people have had the delay already, because of the things that happen immediately. But, as we go forward here, many of us in farming have added ancillary activities to try to help out with our small farming venue to have an income that we can survive on. And this is our income that we provide for our families as we go through the year. So, and that income would be the garden center aspect and some of the flowers that we raise in our greenhouse, aside from our vegetable plants and the vegetable seedlings that are needed for the farm and for others. So, it's going to be a big kink in the network of those venues that we don't are not able to provide that opportunity for the consumers to come in and get those products here in the next 3 or 4 weeks. So Mother's Day, I think Richard mentioned it on one of the calls with Ken Ayers. For his operation, I think it's about 30 or 40% of his business is done through that time period. So, you know, all of us will take a big hit if we're not allowed to let people, you know, browse through carefully our venue and take a look at the stuff and purchase from us. And like I think Richard said, you know, with the, you know, the box stores being open, I know that my wife had to go over something or another the other day, and she said, you know, people are buying plants over there, even Easter flowers, still in that venue. And I know that there's some farmers that have called me that had the tulips and Easter flowers, and they were trying to figure out if they could give them to pick up places at restaurants and stuff to get rid of them. And yet they couldn't sell them themselves, or they were afraid to really not know what they do. I think, see, things have changed a little bit since then, but certainly it's going to hamper our bottom line.
Yeah, and timing's so critical on all our small businesses out there, and there's unique features to all our businesses, but the timing issue is one that we all share, that's for sure. So, Bill, thank you for being there. Let me just see whether
you're welcome.
Traders are. Yeah, okay. I appreciate it. Is Vinny on by any chance? If not, I'll go to Sarah, and then I'll go to Heidi. Sarah, are you on by any chance with Rich?
Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear. Is that Vinny?
Yeah, it's Vinny. Yeah, sorry about that.
We talked this morning. Just introduce yourself. I just want to say that you were one of the farms that we visited on the tour, and then you were generous enough to have one of your greenhouses, and we had one of our on-site shows with several farmers that presented the different variety of farmers in the state. So thank you for being here, and just share your thoughts. You can tell us where your business is, and tell you quickly about your business, and then tell us why it's important for us to open up greenhouses in the state of Rhode Island like Massachusetts has and New Hampshire has and Connecticut has.
Well, we're a retail operation and a wholesale operation. We sell to a number of different garden centers throughout Rhode Island and Massachusetts, and also I'm on the board of a Farm Bureau. And I have so many farmers and small garden centers calling me and asking, you know, why can't the Rhode Island small independents open up with their garden center or even their farm products, some themselves. And, you know, and they're complaining it's a little bit unfair because Massachusetts is allowing it, Connecticut's allowing it, and also the big box stores. Most of the small garden centers or most of the garden centers in Rhode Island are small independents. They're a small business. They have some employees and also their families involved. And what I'm finding is I think the small independents could actually keep it safer for the consumer, because they can regulate it a little better. You know, I had a garden center call me the other day. He says they went into Home Depot, and I hate to say names, but box store, I should say, and there was a lot of people in there buying flowers and plants. Now, a lot of those flowers and plants is not even grown in Rhode Island. They're grown out of state and shipped in. So we're not even getting support to the local grower and the wholesale level.
Vinny, let me tell you, that is a great point. I mean, corporate responsibility here, there's a certain amount of social responsibility here. If you're a big box store in Rhode Island and you can buy product from small businesses here in Rhode Island, you heard it from me, go do it. I want to see, let's make sure we're supporting our small businesses. Vinny, thank you so much for your, again, I'm trying to make sure we stay within the hour here, and I wanted to get Heidi in. Heidi, are you available at this point? Heidi Quinn, who's the director of the Farm Bureau, right? Heidi?
Yes, that's correct.
Please fill in the blanks. Fill in the blanks from what you heard. If we have time, we'll try to get back to Sarah, but if not, please, you get the final word on behalf of the farmers that are looking to get these garden shops open.
Okay, first of all, thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor. So, yes, I'm Heidi Quinn. I'm the Executive Director of Rhode Island Farm Bureau, and we have 1,300 members in Rhode Island, and we're part of the American Farm Bureau, which has 5 million member families in all 50 states and Puerto Rico. And a lot of what we do is to help Rhode Island farmers with issues such as this one that we're currently facing with greenhouse sales. And I'm on daily national calls, and this is an issue across the country. And we'd like Rhode Island to be one of the states that opens greenhouse sales to retail sales again, and not one that restricts our businesses. I would like to reiterate what we've been saying, that one of our greatest concerns is the lack of equity between our local businesses and the big box stores. Just this morning, I was in a big box store, and as I waited in line to go in, utilizing proper social distancing guidelines, there were hundreds and hundreds of plants from out of state that I could purchase and put in my cart, and it made me very sad.
Governor? Senator Miller. I just wanted to see what you both thought of the idea. I'd be willing to help coordinating some restaurants that are safely doing curbside to add some of these greenhouse products that don't have a good venue. They just don't have easy access. Would it make sense to coordinate some restaurants that are responsibly doing curbside to add some of the products from the greenhouses farmers?
I'm sure they would appreciate that. Thank you, Senator. We'll connect you in with Heidi and others to see whether that can make
it might
work.
Be a good solution to get something done sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Well, let's hope something happens.
Well, and I think the issue on the timing is that it's critical to get this done almost immediately, because as several of the farmers have mentioned, we're 3 weeks from Mother's Day, and this is a huge selling time for our businesses. And if they can't get these flowers out, and as Senator Miller offered, that is one way, but we feel that if we could be open with the guidelines that Massachusetts and Connecticut have, where our farms could use proper guidelines, and we think, again, they will be much safer than people in a big box store, because these are their personal businesses. These are family businesses. They're small businesses, and their customers matter to them. And we just think that we need to get these retail operations open immediately.
Yeah, I know some restaurants that have added things like bread and milk very successfully and eggs, and so why not the products that are, ready to not be that need to go out right away.
Yeah. I would just chime in and say anything's a possibility. You know, it's just good to create communications between the various venues. We're all small businesses, and actually, in a sense, we all try to work to help one another within the free market. So it's kind of what could be done. So I wanted to say thank you to Senator Miller there.
Yeah, so Senator, we'll connect you in with the farmers, and we have a whole bunch of restaurants that we've been working with, and anywhere we can cross market at this point in time is really good. And I would also, Heidi, I just want to continue to emphasize that the competition in the big box stores is an issue. We don't want to see, at least I want to see our garden shops open up. I don't want to see, us reverse it and just close down the big boxes, the garden shops there. Let's open up all our garden shops. Otherwise, everybody's going to Massachusetts. Then all of a sudden you're going to see the plants that the big box stores come from Massachusetts, but then you're going to see every plant that's on the front of a yard in their landscaping is going to come from Massachusetts. So we want them to come from Rhode Island, right?
Got it.
Correct.
Thank
absolutely.
You.
That's one of the prime issues right there. We don't want to see anybody's closed down, big box stores or small, but we would like to be open so that's the equitable playing field, that they're all open. And I would at this moment really like to thank DEM Director Coit and Chief of Ag Ken Ayers for all the hard work they have put into drafting these guidelines that would mimic the Massachusetts guidelines so that we can get our garden centers open. They've worked very hard on this.
Yeah, they're great. Janet's great there, and so is Ken. So, but in the end, we're going, just like the beer and wine for the restaurant owners that are out there, we really worked hard to make sure that they're able to do a pickup strategy with the beer and wine. And this is the same thing. It's going to require, the executive department through the governor's office to make this happen. And we know it's happening in other states, so hopefully that's going to happen shortly in Rhode Island with all your good work. I still want to be sensitive to the time frame here. I'd like to just shift a little bit. I know we have a couple of businesses that might be on the line, that have been on the line, that might want to give us a quick update. And then I'd like to circle back to Mark Haywood and to Julietta in terms of whether they wanted to weigh in on anything that they may have heard during this call. So are there any of the businesses that are on the line that, you know, that I, you know, Bonnie or whoever that might have, that might want to weigh in?
Yeah, Dan, I'm on the call.
Yeah. Great, Bonnie. Go ahead.
So I just wanted to deliver a little bit of good news that the radio stations that we own were funded by the PPP today. So we will be able to stay on the air and stay in business, and hopefully the potential rollout of businesses reopening over the upcoming months will enable us to stay in business after a 70-year history with the radio station. So we are grateful for the hard work of the SBA and for our personal bank, and just wanted to deliver a little bit of good news.
Well, Bonnie, thanks for that. I'm sure Mark is happy to hear that. And I know we have, like I said, we know that there's many people who haven't got there yet, but it's really good news because it was a dry period there where we haven't heard about that. We hadn't heard about the emergency money, but Mark was able to announce that Rhode Islanders were getting both of those, on Tuesday's call. So we just got to make sure that we're providing Bonnie all the information that we possibly can through whatever networks that we can to do what the senators, in fact, Senator Miller was talking about. There's many, many, many businesses out there that don't know what to do yet. So we can keep on communicating. That's great. Is there anybody else that might have been on the call?
Lieutenant Jennifer here. My question is for Mark. I did finally apply for a PPP loan, as you suggested, on Tuesday. So that loan went through. I'm still waiting to hear. So is there still a chance that there's still funding for that if the application was received?
Mark, you still there? I think he is.
Yes, Governor, what can I help you with? I'm sorry, I'm also, I got two phones going at the same time.
Yeah, I'm sure you got three more. Jennifer asked the question. Go, Jennifer, yeah. Repeat the question for Mark, and then
what
is he can answer
Mark,
for you.
Mark, from your advice, I was able to apply for a PPP loan on Tuesday.
Okay.
It is in process, so does that mean that there's still a chance to get funding?
No, if you applied, have you heard from your lender? Did they say it went through?
They said it's processing.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah. So, Mark,
if a loan has not gone through, if they have not processed it, then we're not putting anything in the queue. So it could be sitting on their queue, but it would not have been approved. So that was something between you and the lender.
Yeah. And okay. How about a question, Mark, if they do apply, the money ran out, the money gets redone, do they have to reapply?
No, if they've applied with the lender, they should really talk to their lender because the lender are keeping the applications in the queue based upon what I know. I've been told up to 8,000 are already in the queue for lenders across the state. So that's where we stand at this point.
Or the people who are on the panel, is there any more questions of Mark before he,
Because I have to go, Governor.
Yeah, I know you do. We're right up against the clock. All right, well, look, what we're going to do is...
Mark?
Yes, go ahead, Bill.
Mark, real quick, on the I got my PPP loans and I started funding my payroll with them, and I've been fortunate enough that my business is open. Have any of the regulations come out in terms of how to follow the rules for hiring up for the forgiveness period? Because when I read the statute, it said that for 30 days after the enactment of the act, the administrator is going to pass out more regs, and that
there will be more regs, but you should be bringing your people back on. If you got it in the middle of the week, you got your money in the middle of the week, you can wait because the individuals are still on unemployment through the end of that week and then bring them back on the following week, and then your 8 weeks would begin from there.
So when the 8 weeks do I have to be at 80% of full-time equivalents for the full 8 weeks, or is there a forgiveness period to ramp up into that period?
Again, you have to comply with the 75-25.
I am doing that part. Okay, so for now I'm good with that. I just have to get the
I would suggest during that 8-week period you make sure that you're at your full level.
Great. Mark, thank you so much for being here.
All right, thanks.
I hope we see you next Tuesday, and I appreciate your time. We'll keep the questions coming. So I don't know if there's any what I'd like to do is, you know, we're at right at 1 o'clock. We've had several hundred people call in. I'll give you, you know, certainly you can contact our office at that email
Governor?
Address. Yes, go ahead.
Just real quick, this is Alvin DePalma. I wanted to mention earlier, and I'm remiss in not doing that, for the folks, farmers on the line that are associated with the farming issue. Senator Sosnowski has been a leader on this. She's been trying to work this as well. So just know that Senator Sosnowski is trying to work this issue as well and has been for a couple weeks. So I wanted to make certain. I forgot to mention that earlier. Sorry.
Yeah, the good senator that was with me at the Clark Farm on the tour, she's a champion for you, for the farmers, that's for sure. Thanks for mentioning that, Senator.
Lieutenant Governor?
Yes.
This is Lori. I have one quick announcement for the group. We are in partnership with Justin on the rismallbusiness.org site. And for any businesses that are open, you can go to rithrives.com, which is also a button on the RI Small Business site. Rithrives.com is a site where you can list your business as an open business for sales and curbside delivery, curbside pickup, or delivery. So maybe that helps get some of the goods out to customers.
Thanks, Lori. And we're going to hear a lot
Thank
more
you.
About that. Tuesday, right? Thank you so much for
Great,
all the
thanks.
People that are out there working on behalf of the small businesses. I'll just end again. Let's stay safe. Let's stay healthy.
And let's make sure that we support our small businesses
in any way we can. And
Hello?
This messaging, yeah, and this messaging is going to really resonate with people that are listening. So, is there anybody else? Does somebody wanted to weigh in here? Hold on a second.
Yeah, Governor.
Yeah.
It's Richard Sardeller in Newport.
Oh, Richard. Okay, good, Richard.
Yeah, I have a question for the senators. It's more of a, not a question, but a plea, really. When they get back in session, they really have to address the insurance companies and business interruption insurance. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary on Wednesday. We've been paying business interruption insurance for 40 years. We put a claim in, and we're told that viruses are not covered. I would like to see in the future that viruses are mandated to be covered in small business interruption insurance, and if those companies do not include it, they're prohibited from selling that insurance in the state of Rhode Island. I'm not alone on this.
Richard, this is Josh Miller. I've been working on that both locally and nationally. So it is an issue that we're all aware of. It's going to take a state and national approach to fix, and it'll probably have to go into part of the loans that if you got a business interruption claim actually satisfied, and I don't know if anybody has, that you couldn't play it both ways. You either had to take your business interruption or one of the loan programs or some kind of combination thereof to make sure that people weren't playing the system, so to say.
Well, Senator, many of us are waiting to get approval for the PPP, at least that small business interruption insurance.
That's what we're trying to work out.
The last 6 weeks or 7 weeks.
Yeah, it's going to take some change in on both the state and national level to make that work based on the way the contracts are currently written.
Okay.
Yeah, and Mayor, Richard.
Well, it is on our radar. Definitely.
Yeah, it is on the radar, and we've talked about it when the Senator Reid was on and others. It's one that aggravates us, but it's a long shot. It's a long shot. Trust me.
I know it's a long shot, but the insurance companies are very eager to take our payments every year, and they were very nice in the interview they did with me yesterday. But it was a waste of 15 minutes because the end result, I already knew that it's not covered under the insurance.
Yeah, so just be careful what you ask for, because then all of a sudden the insurance rates will go through the roof if you include that too. So everybody's got to be aware of that, right?
But I get your point. I get your frustration. Thanks for asking the question. I want to just make sure that we don't overstay our welcome here. We'll be back again on Tuesday, and we'll try to bring updated information and take as many questions as we can. Thank you for everybody who participated today. Just keep up the good work. Let's keep on pushing hard. This issue on the farm, garden farm issue, talk to your reps and senators about it. Call the governor's office and let them know that that's an important thing for us to do on that piece. We'll be back next week with another business group that is not being treated as fairly as they could be in Rhode Island, where Massachusetts has the advantage over them as well. So keep the ideas coming. I appreciate it very much. Stay healthy, and we'll be talking. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep.